This is Mete Yurtsever, host of the Formula for Creating Value podcast. Today, my special guest is Chip Walker, head of strategy at Strawberry Frog Agency. Welcome, Chip.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So let me introduce you briefly to our audience, and if you have anything to add, please feel free to do so.
Sure.
So Chip Walker is a brand business cultural strategist who has been in planning and strategy roles at some of the Madison Avenue's legendary advertising agencies, such as Wunderman, BBDO, Strawberry Frog, Young & Rubicam. And those are either creative agencies or a digital social agency or a marketing services agency. Therefore, I guess you have the full scope of the multidisciplinary perspective of the advertising world, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. That happens when you get to be as old as I am. At some point, you've worked everywhere.
So I cannot skip this question. I would like to start with, you worked with those fellas pictured in the Mad Men series, TV series, right?
You know, that was a little before my time.
No, definitely. I started, but I mean, like they were like, it was in the 60s, 70s, and maybe they were like old pals.
I didn't really start in advertising till kind of the 90s, so sure. So it was a little later. But I have to say, you know, things looked more like the TV series when I started than they do today. It's a lot different today.
Sure, sure. And I was wondering what has changed since those times, and what did you learn from those guys? Okay, not those guys, but maybe what has changed in the culture of agencies since then?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you know, literal Madison Avenue, you know, it's a lot of people don't realize that's literally a big avenue in New York City, which is where I live and where I've worked most of my life. So it used to be that the big agencies were all on Madison Avenue. And in fact, I worked on Madison Avenue at Young & Rubicam for many years. Mm-hmm. But today it's literally, you know, the literal Madison Avenue is not where most agencies are. They're elsewhere in New York City and certainly around the country and around the world. And COVID has only made it less important, like what avenue you're on. So So geographically, Madison Avenue kind of is no more in terms of the center of advertising. But, you know, people still call it that. Mm-hmm. Call the advertising industry sort of Madison Avenue. And I feel like, you know, a bunch of things have changed. I think there was a time when the industry was dominated by these super large holding companies that you've probably heard of, like Omnicom and Publicis in France. I'd say those guys are still around. In terms of what's changed on quote-unquote Madison Avenue, so I think there's been a big diversification beyond just the focus on paid ads. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started in the business, I worked on Scope mouthwash from Procter & Gamble, and there was probably a team of 20 or 30 people, and we made like 3 TV commercials a year. That's what we did. We mostly just made TV commercials. So we certainly make our fair share of video and TV commercials these days. But I think that, you know, obviously the media landscape has transformed. So we focus on all kinds of stuff that are beyond, not only beyond TV, but beyond paid ads. So I think there's a lot bigger focus these days on using creativity to solve business problems. And, you know, digital and social are much more the norm. They're not sort of specialties. It's something that everyone does and everyone knows about. So I'd say, you know, focusing on business solutions and using creativity to solve problems beyond just ads, I'd say is probably the biggest shift that I've seen.
Right. So things gone really mad in that sense. It's some people call it like Math Men, not anymore Mad Men, right? So they're
Math Men, yeah. A little bit. I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah. All right. So today we'll talk about, the main topic will be about purpose. I'd like to start with, does every company need to have a purpose? I mean, every size, every sector of companies, do they need a purpose?
Yeah, I don't think that's a question that's up to me to answer. I think it's a very personal decision on the part of the folks who are leading a company. I do think you should only pursue having a purpose if it's something that's meaningful to you and something as a leader that you're going to take seriously. So I think just the idea of like, oh, it's the thing that we do to check a box. Everybody has one. So let's come up with a purpose and let's put it in the about section on our website. I think, unfortunately, that's what a lot of clients do, but it doesn't really amount to truly having a purpose. That's the reason I don't I don't feel like I'm somebody who should mandate every company should have one. I feel like you should have one as a leader if it's something you believe in and think is important. Otherwise, you're probably not going to actually do anything with it.
Right. So actually, yeah, how one company can find its own purpose? If it's is there a way to discover it, or what would you advise them?
Yeah. And there are plenty of people out there, myself and my company, Strawberry Frog included, who work with companies and organizations to help them articulate their purpose. Mm-hmm. I usually try to talk about it more in terms of articulating your purpose as opposed to like discovering it or inventing it, mm-hmm. just because I feel like in every situation I've ever worked with, you know, some semblance of purpose usually already exists within an organization. Mm-hmm. You don't have to sort of make it up. You just have to kind of examine things closely, think about it hard, think about the intersection between what the world needs, what you're good at, and sort of the value you deliver to articulate what the purpose is, as opposed to this other idea of making something up and declaring that that is our purpose. I think what can happen when you do that is you end up with something that's not terribly, it might sound good, but it's not very authentic to your actual underlying business. But anyway, getting back to answer your question, how do you end up defining your purpose? As I said, typically it involves having either someone inside the company or you know, a consultant like or an agency like ours come in and work with the leadership of the team to think about the value that the company brings to the world and sort of what the world needs, and just basically going through an exercise to write some sample purpose statements, vetting them, you know, thinking about them hard, spending some time, and then ultimately landing on the set of words that you think capture sort of your purpose in the world beyond making money.
Mm-hmm. And does this have to do always with sustainability? Because this is something that also people, I think, feel like. I mean, does it, as if the purpose has to do something with sustainability for them?
Mm-hmm. No. I've worked with a lot of companies who, although they may do a lot of sustainable activities, and one outcome of their purpose may be that they choose to think a lot about sustainability, but the purpose itself doesn't necessarily talk about sustainability. Mm-hmm. Some examples: UPS, which is a large package delivery company, sort of like mm-hmm. Federal Express or DHL. Mm-hmm. Their purpose is moving the world forward by delivering what matters. Hmm. So it's, you know, it's that really that's a great purpose to me, because it happens at the intersection of what they do functionally in the world, which is delivering things, mm-hmm. and the kind of world they would like to see, which is that things that matter get delivered in a great fashion. Now, as part of that, do they have a strong focus on sustainability? Yeah, but it's not the purpose itself.
I see.
And so you know, there are some companies like Unilever who their purpose is about making sustainability commonplace. They have chosen to make that front and center, mm-hmm. but not every company does that.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like the purpose plays different role for employees or for customers? And then whether the purpose has to be like identical for like single one for both for employees and for customers, or may they differ in a way?
Yeah, I'll give you my opinion on that, which is that I do not think you should have different purposes for different audiences, like employees versus customers. I mean, I feel like one purpose for the company is what's needed to unify all of your different stakeholders around a single purpose. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, I think most people I know would agree with that. So one purpose, not multiple. Now, having said that, the purpose I have seen and witnessed can play a very different role depending on which stakeholder you are. So a different role for employees versus the role it serves for customers. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we're discovering about purpose is that there are starting to emerge very strong business performance metrics that are showing that highly purposeful organizations actually perform better financially, mm-hmm. which you know, is I think has surprised a lot of people. And one of the reasons I think this is happening is that highly purposeful organizations who have activated their purpose successfully inside the company with employees have employees who are more strongly motivated. They're more engaged at work. They have more loyalty to their company and are less likely to want to leave. Obviously that can help the firm's performance. So one role of purpose that's sort of different for employees is that it's giving employees a reason to want to get up and go to work every day mm-hmm. and do a job that is meaningful to them. Mm-hmm. So that's very different, I think, than for maybe a customer mm-hmm. who's doing business with a company whose purpose it agrees with, and they're doing it because they would like their money and their loyalty to go towards a company that they think agrees with their values. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it can be the same purpose, but it's playing a different role, you know, in helping employees be motivated to go to work and helping consumers feel like this is a brand I'd like to give my money to. Mm-hmm.
And my question would be like, how do you differ the brand purpose from value proposition for the customer? I mean, like, what is the distinction between the two?
Yeah, I mean, for me, value proposition is usually much more functional. And by that, I mean, it is sort of the product or service oriented reason why a customer would choose your product over that of a competitor's. Mm-hmm. So you might think of it as closer to something like a unique selling proposition. Mm-hmm. So this bank's checking account has no fees and it has all these other features and the bank across the street doesn't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So our value proposition, you know, has a lot more to do with the nuts and bolts of how a product or service delivers for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's super important. Mm-hmm. Having said that, purpose to me operates at a higher level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's why your company exists or your offering exists beyond making money mm-hmm. and why doing business with your company or working there is more meaningful, important and would fit better with your values. Mm-hmm. I gave the UPS example. UPS, in terms of their value proposition, I don't know how they articulate it, but it's long been associated with being really good at logistics, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. means they deliver things better on time and you don't miss your packages and all that kind of stuff versus Federal Express. Mm-hmm. But their purpose is about moving the world forward by delivering what matters. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I would say about value proposition and purpose is that the two of them you ought to see a very clear link between the two of them for a company. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's one of the most important aspects for making sure that your purpose is actionable, is that not only at a higher level does it work, but when you drill down to a value proposition, you can see how purpose and value prop relate to one another.
Mm-hmm. So, because I wonder whether, customers say that they care about purpose, but do they really act accordingly in their purchasing decision, or is it the value proposition which plays a bigger role than purpose? Or actually, I'll ask a second question. I mean, can this have a different impact on different cultures, different countries? I mean, like some countries are sort of like more purpose sensitive and others are not, or can you say something like this?
The research I've seen has been mostly in the developed world mm-hmm. around purpose and its impact. Mm-hmm. And I would say generally the research I've seen has indicated that there's a fairly large group of people kind of across the developed world for whom purpose is an important decision factor. Mm-hmm. It's not the only decision factor, but it is a decision factor in a lot of their purchases. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't have a data set to call on to talk about the underdeveloped world or the developing mm-hmm. world, but at least mm-hmm. in the developed world, it seems to be fairly universally a factor in, mm-hmm. in what I buy.
And it's growing.
Seems to be, yeah, especially in the West. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how did you initiate this purpose power index with Reputation Institute, right? I mean, how the idea came up and how did you build it?
Yeah, so my business partner, Scott Goodson, and I had been working, doing a lot of purposing work with our clients, I'd say 2017, 18, 19. And one of the things that we kept getting asked was, how do you measure purpose? Or how do we know it's important? Do people actually really care about this? Mm-hmm. And we kind of looked around in the marketplace, and there were all kinds of brand equity studies and brand reputation studies and most admired companies and all that kind of stuff. But we didn't really see any kind of research instrument or tool that would measure a company, the degree to which a company was perceived to be purposeful. So we thought, well, maybe we should see if we can address that. So we partnered with the Reputation Institute, or the company was then called the Reputation Institute. Mm-hmm. It's now called RepTrack, but it's one of the most well-respected brand equity and reputation measurement companies in the world. Mm-hmm. So they're a very, very strong research company. So we partnered with them to help design this study that we called the Purpose Power Index. Mm-hmm. And it was, we did sort of an experimental study to develop an instrument to figure out what was the right way to measure purpose. Mm-hmm. And then we applied that to a study in 2019 of over 200 brands. Mm-hmm. And we started out in the US. Mm-hmm. Simply because we thought let's pilot it in one country and then we'll see about expanding it. So we piloted the study in 2019 with over 200 brands in, I think, 15 or 17 different industries. Mm-hmm. We did a global study in 2020, mm-hmm. and then we repeated the USA study in 2021. So I think what's kind of interesting is that if it comes up, I can talk about it later, but we have two data points for the study in the United States, one from just before the pandemic at the mm-hmm. end of 2019, mm-hmm. and one right in the middle of the pandemic in mm-hmm. 2021. And we did see some rather dramatic shifts. But mm-hmm. at any rate, getting back to the idea of the Purpose Power Index, it was to measure to what degree are major corporations and companies seen as purposeful. Mm-hmm. In fact, are any? Mm-hmm. And it turns out some are. Mm-hmm. And does that matter at all? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we did find that there was a relatively small group of companies that are seen as highly purposeful, and that there are many, many companies that are not. Mm-hmm. So it's actually very hard to be seen as purposeful, but some mm-hmm. companies managed to pull it off. Mm-hmm. We started to understand what are the factors that drive a company to be seen as purposeful, and there are five. And then lastly, what's the impact, at least stated impact, on people's willingness to buy from a company, to work for a company, to invest in a company, to defend a company if somebody else attacks it. Mm-hmm. And all of these things seem to have a very positive impact on all of those things, included purchase, at least from a stated standpoint. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about the Purpose Power Index.
Mm-hmm. And what were the these? So you described as five P's, right?
So we discovered that there were several companies, both in 2019 and 2021, who were seen as purposeful. And some of these were sort of the kinds of companies that are, I call them purpose born. Mm-hmm. So, and some of these companies, I realize that may not be as familiar in your part of the world, mm-hmm. Especially from the USA studies. But mm-hmm. these were brands like Tesla, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, very much founded about being about electric and sustainability. So you can imagine people know from the get-go that that's a very purposeful company.
Right.
But we also saw brands like Unilever, mm-hmm. Which has really just fought hard to be seen as purposeful, mm-hmm. you know, getting that kind of recognition. Mm-hmm. We saw brands like REI, which is a retailer here that very much focuses on the outdoors and making the outdoors more accessible for people. Mm-hmm. But we also saw companies like SpaceX that are kind of bold innovators. Mm. I say in the 2021 study, we saw big pharma like Pfizer, mm-hmm. which came up with a vaccine, get a lot of credit for being mm-hmm. purposeful. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of companies that are seen as purposeful. And we discovered five underlying factors that mm-hmm. sort of statistically predict mm-hmm. will consumers or the public see as being purposeful. Mm-hmm. And they are product, mm-hmm. progress, mm-hmm. which is, and product is just about, do you make products and services that mm-hmm. make the world and life better. Mm-hmm. The second one is called progress, and it's really about do you innovate things that benefit mankind? Mm-hmm. The third one is planet, and that is really the one that's about sustainability that we were talking about, sustainable mm-hmm. operations, sustainable products and services. Mm-hmm. The fourth is about people, taking care of people, both mm-hmm. in your communities through philanthropy mm-hmm. And your employees. Mm-hmm. And then the last one we call positive change. And that one's really all about social activism and taking up important issues and movements mm-hmm. and societal causes like equality and things like that, that a lot of CEOs are taking up these days. Mm-hmm. So as I said, it's product, progress, planet, people, and positive change. Those mm-hmm. were the five factors. And the brands that tended to do the best in the study were strong on more than one of those things.
Right. So actually, and then after, COVID, that's good. More on which factor? On making something for people became more relevant?
You know, the factors stayed in, it's just in their order of importance, because that was the order of importance that I just gave you. Product mm-hmm. was number one, mm-hmm. progress number two, mm-hmm. planet number three, people number four, and positive change number five. Mm-hmm. So before and after COVID, the order of importance did not change. Product is still number one. Mm. Innovation or progress is number two. Mm-hmm. Which companies got credit mm-hmm. changed from mm-hmm. pre-COVID to post-COVID. I see. One of the things, for example, that we saw in the United States is people that are bold innovators like Tesla and SpaceX mm-hmm. got a lot more credit. Mm-hmm. We also saw that folks that were doing a lot on the front of very helpful everyday mm-hmm. products mm-hmm. got the companies getting credit for that change. So we saw companies like Clorox, which make disinfecting products, right. mm-hmm. got a lot more credit. Mm-hmm. Companies like 3M that make masks got mm-hmm. a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. Companies like Kimberly-Clark here who make toilet paper. Mm-hmm. I don't know, there's some kind of weird fixation on toilet paper right. during the pandemic, which I do not understand, but whatever. Anyway, they got a lot more credit. So anyway, to summarize, the order of importance didn't change. The companies that got credit for it did shift.
Right.
And it's interesting because we're about to do the research again mm-hmm. in the next month or so. And I'll be interested to see if those pandemic purpose brands end up retaining that perception or if it will start to fade.
Well, I doubt. I mean, like people were when they were more in sort of fear and worries. So that more likely to affect their perceptions and feelings probably. But it's not actually surprising the product to lead all these things because that's what people get the most of the cues of purpose.
Well, yeah, that's true. But having said that, as somebody who's been researching brand equity for decades, mm-hmm. if you go to a brand tracking presentation every year, you probably know that brand equity measures don't change very much. Mm-hmm. Things like, is the brand relevant? Are you aware of it? Is it different? Mm-hmm. A lot of times, years to years, those just don't change. Mm-hmm. So we were actually surprised to see how many shifts we saw in purpose perception, which made us start to think that purpose perception may be a lot more culturally sensitive or sensitive mm-hmm. to the news cycle than other measures of brand.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you published a book called Activate Brand Purpose. So
correct.
And then that's so you introduce a concept of this movement marketing. Can you tell mm-hmm. us a bit about that?
Yeah. So And actually, we had the idea about movement marketing, or we call it movement thinking. Before that, Scott Goodson and I, in sort of running Strawberry Frog, had that philosophy for a long time. But and I'll come back to that. But the book, Activate Brand Purpose, it's harnessing the power of movements to transform your company is the full name of the book. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we wrote the book and why it's called what it's called is that, you know, I mentioned earlier that Scott and I had been working with top company leaders through 2017, 18, 19, 20. And we kept hearing the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. which is that there was a lot of conversation and a desire to discuss with us this topic of higher purpose. It was on the minds of top leaders in practically every company that we talked to. And beyond that, we heard that they tended to have the same complaint, I guess, about it, which is that often they had developed a purpose, or sometimes they had developed more than one purpose. They had, you know, a consultant in, and they developed a purpose 2 years ago, and then sort of nothing happened with it. So they had another consultant in, and they developed another purpose, and again, nothing happened. And over again, we heard this, you know, we're all into purpose, but what do we do with it? Mm-hmm. We started to realize that we had an answer for that, that we had had this concept that we'd call movement marketing that we'd been doing with clients for a number of years that was really tailor-made to take a company's higher purpose and make it something that was easy to activate out in the world. Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, one way to sort of describe what a movement is, and when I say movement, I mean think about a societal movement out there, mm-hmm. Me Too or the LGBTQ plus mm-hmm. Rights movement, the mm-hmm. women's movement. All of them are a group of people with a shared purpose. You know, mm-hmm. they're rallying around a shared purpose, mm-hmm. hoping to bring about change. Mm-hmm. So a movement, in some ways, is purpose activated. People can't join a purpose, but they can join a movement inspired by a purpose and actually do something with it. Mm-hmm. So, we knew a lot about movement making. We knew the principles of movement making based on that of societal movements. And we started to see that that was really the best way to activate a brand's purpose. Mm-hmm. So we decided to write a book that would be helpful to all these clients we were talking to, called Activate Brand Purpose, all about how to use movement thinking to bring your purpose to life and make it actionable. Mm-hmm. So that's really what the book is about. And it's kind of it talks about the philosophy of using movements to activate purpose, but then it goes into some case examples. And again, we tried not to use the usual suspects. So we have some, I think, more unusual examples. Mm-hmm. And then we go into kind of a how-to, how do you actually do this?
Mm-hmm. That is something that also, I think, inevitably, I mean, with the new generations, this is the way they identify themselves and this is how they express themselves, right? I mean, this... all these boycotting, yeah. whatever, I mean, with social media and everything boosted. I mean, like people, sometimes, I mean, like wrong signals, wrong messages, but I mean, like people like to jump on things and they like to learn the truth. I mean, like, or just force the decision makers into one direction. So this is something very much in line with it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think we're seeing much more of an activist mindset mm-hmm. among people, not just about like big societal movements, but in terms of dealing with issues and trends that they deal with in everyday life and with the brands and companies they use. And I think that's one of the reasons you see so many CEOs today feeling like they have to kind of make a statement about mm-hmm. major societal issues that are going on, just because younger people in particular kind of expect it. Mm-hmm.
And can you give us something that, as you mentioned, one of the usual suspects or one of the irregular ones, I mean, some examples on or how you help maybe brands into turning this purpose into action?
Sure. Happy. I can talk about one or two. One of my favorites is from here in the USA. And it's the reason I think it's kind of interesting is because it's for a category that I don't think you would normally associate with these kinds of topics around purpose and movements. And it's actually a bank. Mm-hmm. It's a bank here. It's a large one called SunTrust is the name of it. It's one of the larger banks in the country. They came to us around 2015, 16, I think, it was when we first started working with them at Strawberry Frog. Mm-hmm. And it was a similar situation to that I've been talking about in that they had developed a purpose for themselves. And we're trying to sort of figure out, well, how do we, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. And the purpose that they had developed, as I said, they're a bank, a financial services company. And the purpose was called lighting the way to financial well-being, mm-hmm. Which sounds great, mm-hmm. right? But again, I think the issue is if you're a teller in the bank or if you're, I don't know, working as a wealth manager, what is that? What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. Or if you're a customer, It sounds good, but what does that really mean for you? Why would you want to do business with the bank? So it's this classic situation I was talking about, which they have a purpose, which is probably a good one, and it makes sense, but how do we make it actionable? So that was our goal in coming up with a movement platform under that purpose for SunTrust, which is what we did. One of the keys of movement thinking is that all movements start with some sort of a dissatisfaction and change that the people who believe in the movement want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something you're not happy about, and there's an enemy out in the world that you want to overcome, and you do that by taking some sort of a stand. Mm-hmm. That the movement's all about. So that was kind of the framework that we applied to thinking about SunTrust and their situation. So in terms of coming up with what is the enemy that SunTrust is going to rail against in the world for its movement, we really looked around at culture in 2015-16 in the United States. And I think what we saw was that despite the fact that the financial crisis had been over for several years, the majority of Americans had not recovered financially. Mm-hmm. There were terrible statistics out there around people having trouble coming up with $400 in case of an emergency. And that while maybe corporate America had recovered, most Americans hadn't. And it was resulting in a massive amount of financial stress. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of an epidemic of financial stress. So it became very clear that what SunTrust needed to do was to kind of lead a movement that was to get rid of financial stress and enable financial confidence for all Americans, for everybody, no matter if you're rich or poor. Mm-hmm. And that really became the movement idea for them, which was really all about financial confidence for all. Mm-hmm. We called the movement ONUP, which stands for Onwards and Upwards. Mm-hmm. We rolled it out first internally. And it was really a lot about financial education. So it was about educating SunTrust's employees themselves, who a lot of them had a lot of financial stress, mm-hmm. about how do you yourself become more financially confident? What are the tools you need? What is the knowledge you need? How do you get there? So we did that internally first, and then we rolled out the program to customers, which again, a lot of it having to do with financial education that makes you financial confidence. The program was so successful internally at SunTrust that a lot of SunTrust customers themselves, large corporations like Coca-Cola and UPS and FedEx, mm-hmm. Decided that they would like SunTrust to come into their companies and roll out this program to help their employees become more financially confident. Mm-hmm. So it was a program you could join. ONUP was a program you could join. Ultimately, within, I think, 5 or 6 years, we'd had 6 million people who became part of the movement and went through the ONUP financial confidence program. Mm-hmm. So it's been a huge success for SunTrust. I think the difference is that, you know, when you think about lighting the way to financial well-being, that sounds good. But when you start talking to employees about our goal, our role in the world is to help people become more financially confident, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, they feel like they're part of something and they sort of know what to do. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. in that way, I think that's an example of how we took a purpose and actually made it more actionable.
Mm-hmm. So basic, but so powerful and so important. I mean, like something that we very, very easily oversee, but this is something very important. It seems very, I mean, like, I don't think it was very costly, but I'm sure it's the return.
Oh, no, it was costly.
Okay.
It was.